Good morning. This is the Green Valley News for Monday, October 27th. Mark DeGroft with you here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Early Friday, St. Anne's Church in Tubac displayed a sculpted silver reliquary in the form of a cross containing bone chips of six American saints that were canonized by Pope John Paul II in the year 2000. The cross, permanently displayed at a shrine in Guadalajara, Mexico, has been on an international tour. In 1917, the Mexican government had implemented constitutional articles seeking to limit the power of the Catholic Church in Mexico and its affiliated organizations to suppress religious practice. Resistance to the government's policies led to an all-out rebellion by its citizens. The conflict, called the Cristero War, is known in Spanish as La Cristiada. The relic bones belonged to six Catholic priests who were among dozens of faithful martyred execution style in Mexico from 1926 through 1929. From Tubac, the relic cross was taken to Nogales and displayed during Mass at Sacred Heart of Jesus Parish with hundreds in attendance, many laying flowers before the iconic piece. From there, it is set to travel to Douglas and then on to California. Historic Old Tubac is known for its interesting history and buildings, but it takes hard work and a lot of time to keep those buildings maintained, leaving Diane Jansen and Kirk Gilliam knowing exactly what to do when they bought the historic Pennington House 5 months ago. Tubac historian, author, and Jansen's neighbor Nancy Valentine reached out to Alex Lim, a 13-year-old Nogales resident with a graduate degree in historic preservation, and Tuma Conquering National Historical Park employee preserving the mission. Well, it was a highly competitive day across the board in the Baja Fall Softball League on Wednesday. The Allison League's Team White came to the park ready to play on Wednesday, hammering out hit after hit to take the first game 21-9. Behind solid glove work from Steve Coldcuts Calton in the left field, Team Gray woke up and made the second game exciting, stopping a rally in the final inning to preserve a 17-16 victory and a split. Home run heroics came from Calton, Andy Bamos, Ben Chivo Bergsteiner, Sean K. Keybell, and three or four bombs by Chris Stacy. Meanwhile, in the Catino League, Team Black swept the Reds, taking a game 10-7 in the second contest with a walk-off 22-0. Roughly 35 homes were left without water for about 8 hours on Thursday after an aging 4-inch distribution main broke on East Los Arcos, south of Esperanza Boulevard of Mabrego Drive. Community Water Company of Green Valley General Manager Arturo Gobaldon, said Santa Rita Fire District crews were performing routine fire hydrant maintenance when the 61-year-old line broke at about 4 o'clock p.m., and it resulted in the loss of about 150,000 gallons of water. Water personnel went door-to-door to let homeowners know what was going on. Water crews replaced 10 feet of the concrete asbestos cement pipe with ductile iron, Gobaldon said, and then they restored system pressures, flushed the line, and checked to be sure service had been restored. The roadway sustained significant damage during the repair and will be restored, Gobaldon said. One lane remains open for local access and crossing. Community Water serves about 24,000 people and is the largest of six companies that provide water to local residents. The company has 159 miles of asbestos concrete pipe that are being replaced as needed with ductile iron. CWC Water has a water system improvement plan that is revised every 5 years. It evaluates pipes, valves, their four wells, and other factors to determine the needs. The company is going to be replacing one of its wells south of Esperanza soon after attempts to reline and rescue weren't successful, Gobaldon said. It is a critical spot in our system, and we really need the water because between a sulfate plume coming in on the west and on the river on the east, we have a very thin, source of water that comes from the south to the north, and it is very critical that we have this well site, Gobaldon said. They've met with the HOA and they'll be doing a lot of sound abatement as it's in the middle of a neighborhood and will be running 24/7, Cabaldon said. We need to get this well and we just don't have a choice. We need the water, he said. In addition, CWC is working on borrowing money to relocate the mains in Pueblo Estates, he said. They put the main in the alleys and people built walls over them, and they've upped the dirt and it's impossible to get to, and if a leak happens, we may lose houses, Cabaldon said. We don't know how we're ever going to supply water there. I have to go through 10 yards and 10 walls to get to a leak potentially. This is bad, that's bad, and we can't even get our equipment in there. Everything has to be done by hand, and it's unsafe, so we want to be proactive in identifying those and then fixing them as well. The lawsuit seeking to circumvent Republican House leaders to swear in Arizona's newest Democratic member of Congress was assigned to a judge appointed by Trump. U.S. District Court Judge Trevor McFadden will hear a lawsuit filed by Representative-elect Adelita Grijalva, the Democrat from Arizona, and Democratic Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays. The lawsuit asks a federal judge to greenlight an alternative way to swear Grijalva into Congress because House Speaker Mike Johnson, the Republican from Louisiana, has declined to let her officially enter the chamber for a month after the special election in Arizona's 7th Congressional District. The assignment places McFadden at the center of the inter-party fight that is simmering on Capitol Hill. McFadden is among the more conservative justices on the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, Bloomberg reported. Trump appointed him to the bench during his first term, and 11 of the court's 15 judges were appointed by Democratic presidents. The judge made headlines earlier this year when he sided with the Associated Press in its decision not to follow the Trump administration's renaming of the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America. McFadden has sided with GOP administration on other issues during Trump's second term, though such as a rule is to rule immigrants to file with the federal government. At the heart of the Grijalva case is Johnson's decision to slow walk her entrance into Congress during the ongoing federal government shutdown. The House leader so far declined to set a date to administer Grijalva her oath of office, saying he believes the House should be in session to do so. However, Johnson has signaled he will not bring the House back into session until Senate lawmakers make progress on the ongoing federal government shutdown, which is now in its 24th day. It's a break for Johnson, who quickly swore in two Republican winners of Florida special elections earlier this year, despite the House being out of session. This case is about whether someone duly elected to the House, who indisputably meets the unconditional qualifications of the office, may be denied her rightful office simply because the Speaker has decided who indisputably meets the constitutional qualifications of the office may be denied her rightful office simply because the Speaker has decided to keep the House out of regular session, Grijalva's lawsuit says. Grijalva was elected to fill the seat of her late father, Representative Raul Grijalva, the Democrat in Arizona, in a September special election. More than 800,000 residents of her southern Arizona congressional district have been without representation since he died in March of 2025 after battling lung cancer. The district stretches across the Arizona-Mexico border and encompasses parts of Tucson, Yuma, and Nogales, Avondale, and Tolleson in Metro Phoenix. Grijalva and Mays filed the suit against the U.S. House's representatives, House Clerk Kevin McCumber and Sergeant-at-Arms William McFarland. It requests that the judge order that someone else can administer Grijalva's oath of office and that she must be recognized as a member of the House once she takes it. The suit also argues that a federal law saying the House Speaker swears in members of Congress is not supported by the U.S. Constitution. Mays spokesperson Richie Taylor and Grijalva spokesperson Nate Segal did not comment on the assignment of the case to McFadden. Looming over Grijalva's swearing in is her support for a House measure that would require a vote to release the Jeffrey Epstein investigative files. Johnson has denied that the Epstein measure is a factor in the swearing-in fight, but Arizona Democrats say they aren't buying it. He doesn't want her being the last signature needed on this discharge petition to release the Epstein files. Senator Mark Kelly, Democrat Arizona, said on MSNBC, Mike Johnson, now for a number of weeks, is protecting the people that were associated with Jeffrey Epstein. That is all that this is about. An outbreak of measles along the Arizona border and with Utah has grown to 123 cases, and multiple people have been hospitalized, updated data shows. As of October 23rd, an outbreak of the highly contagious respiratory illness concentrated in and around the rural community of Colorado City in northern Arizona had reached 80 cases, according to the Arizona Department of Health Services. The total number of Arizona measles cases so far in 2025 is 84. The outbreak extends across the state border into Washington and Iron counties in southwestern Utah, where cases have climbed to 43 as of October 23rd. A total of 7 people, 5 in Utah and 2 in Arizona, have been hospitalized because of the measles, the data shows. There are some weekly coordination meetings we have with Arizona health authorities, said David Heaton, public information officer for the Southwest Utah Public Health Department. Most of our residents are vaccinated. It's just the folks who choose not to. A lot of them are kind of set in that decision. But most people know about MMR, especially if they have kids. 2 doses of the MMR vaccine are 97% effective in protecting against measles infection, evidence shows. The vaccine with the lowest uptake for Arizona kindergarten students is consistently MMR, measles, mumps, and rubella. Measles is highly contagious, potentially fatal airborne virus that can affect people of any age and cause an array of complications, including deafness, blindness, and brain inflammation. Colorado City and its neighbors across the state line, Hillsdale, Utah, were once collectively known as Short Creek and still operate as one community. Hilldale and Colorado City were originally settled by members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, who were known for practicing polygamy. Since the arrest and conviction of the group's prophet, Warren Jeffs, for sexually assaulting children, the religious group's stronghold in the area diminished and the community has changed and diversified. While it may be too early to say for certain, the number of suspected cases in Utah appears to have slowed down over the past week. The outbreak is unusual in southwestern Utah, which has not had any measles cases in the last 18 years, as long as Heaton has held the job. This is kind of the year for measles resurging, he said. I think we're part of that phenomenon where it has really spread in unimmunized communities. Cases of measles are reaching record levels in the United States and globally as well. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, there have been about a total of 1,618 confirmed measles cases reported in the United States in 2025, and those cases included 3 deaths and 198 hospitalizations. A Marana father pleaded guilty on Wednesday to second-degree murder in the hot car death of his young daughter outside of the family's home in 2024. Christopher Schultz will face up to 30 years in prison when he is sentenced next month. The first-degree murder trial against Schultz was set to begin next week. Instead, he pleaded guilty in Pima County Superior Court to second-degree murder and felony child abuse. In July of 2024, Schultes left his 2-year-old daughter, Parker, in a car for hours. The girl died of exposure. Evidence showed he toted Parker to several stores earlier that day, in which he allegedly stole alcohol. He then went home and played video games, watched pornography, and then texted his wife. Schultes was arrested after the incident but was released without bond, thus avoiding any time behind bars. On Wednesday, Schultz appeared in court clean-shaven and dressed in a suit. He showed no emotion during the hearing that lasted about 15 minutes. Schultz must turn himself in on November 5th. A sentencing hearing is set for November 21st. County Attorney Laura Conover said the sentences imposed by the judge will run consecutively, and Schultz will face between 20 and 30 years in prison. He will not be eligible for early release and must serve 100% of his sentence, her office said. This is yet another reminder to the community that the Pima County Attorney's Office will do nothing we can to get justice for victims and prosecute those who have caused harm to others, especially those who are the most vulnerable, Conover said in a news release. We're grateful for the hard work and the dedication of our prosecutors, victim advocates, staff for their collaboration and local law enforcement on this complicated and high-profile case, Conover said. Parker was in her car seat on a sweltering hot Arizona summer day in July of 2024. A man jailed in connection with a fatal stabbing is now facing additional charges in a separate deadly shooting, Tucson police say. Joshua Vincent Lee Poe, 40 years old, was arrested on suspicion of first-degree murder and being a prohibited possessor of a gun in connection with the fatal August 25th shooting of Matthew Eric Zimmerman, who was 56 years old, according to Tucson police. Zimmerman, who lived in an encampment, was shot and killed in a wash near the 900 block of South Warren Avenue near East Aviation Parkway and East 18th Street. Poe was already one of two men that were jailed in connection with the October 19th killing of a man who was found wounded in the front yard of a Midtown house, police said. Alec Richard Newling, 25 years old, died at the hospital after being found outside of a house in the 500 block of East Maple Street near East Speedway and North 4th Avenue. Poe and Sean Whitaker, 19, were each arrested on suspicion of second-degree murder and other charges in Newland's killing, police said. Poe remains jailed on $2 million bond. Tucson police shot and wounded an armed robbery suspect in a shootout on Saturday morning at an Eastside store. The gunman's injuries were not life-threatening, police said, and nobody else was injured. TPD gave the following account in a news release. At about 9:45 a.m., a caller to 911 reported an armed robbery at Walmart Neighborhood Market located at 8640 East Broadway. The robber's description matched that of a man police had been told shot at an occupied apartment in the complex at the 8600 block of East Old Spanish Trail about 5 minutes before the Walmart incident. No one was struck in the apartment shooting. Two police officers chased the gunman at Walmart, ordering him to drop his weapon, and gunfire was exchanged. Officers took the man into custody and rendered aid. He was then taken to a local hospital. Police didn't release the names of the alleged robber or officers. A 35-year-old woman was killed in a crash with a dump truck Thursday afternoon on Tucson's northeast side. About 1:15 p.m., Elizabeth Ann Prey was headed north on North Craycroft Road when she made an improper left in front of a dump truck at East River Road, the Pima County Sheriff's Department said in a news release. Prey was killed at the crash scene. The unidentified driver of the dump truck was driving south on Craycroft and had the green light, the release said. The dump truck fell into the drainage embankment after the wreck, but the driver was not injured. And now taking a look at last week in review, Senate Republicans refused to yield to Democratic demands for health care funds into the fourth week of the government shutdown. The Senate rejected dueling partisan bills to pay federal workers during the shutdown on Thursday, with both Republicans and Democrats deflecting blame as many employees were set to miss their first full paycheck at the end of the week. Led by Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, Democrats seized the Senate floor on Wednesday to protest Trump's presidency amid the shutdown and push for Republicans to negotiate with them on expiring health insurance subsidies. Merkley's speech went on for more than 22 hours, one of the longest in Senate history. North Carolina Republican legislative leaders completed their remapping of the state's U.S. House districts on Wednesday, intent on picking up one or more seats to help Trump efforts to retain GOP control of Congress in next year's midterm elections. Paul Ingracia, Trump's pick to lead the federal watchdog agency, the Office of Special Counsel, withdrew from consideration on Tuesday evening after his offensive text messages were made public and Republican senators even revolted. From the Pentagon, several conservative news outlets said on Wednesday that they agreed to a new press policy rejected by virtually all legacy media organizations and will take their place in the Pentagon to cover Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and the U.S. military. $38 trillion, that's the record amount the United States government's gross national debt surpassed last Wednesday, according to Treasury Department report that logs the nation's daily finances. It's interesting because I'm the one that makes the decision, right? That's what Donald Trump said Tuesday to the government, saying that the government owes him a lot of money for prior Justice Department probes into his actions and claiming that he had to have the ultimate say on payments. He reportedly had filed claims seeking $230 million in damages. A problem at Amazon's cloud computing service disrupted internet use around the world last Monday. The outage took down a broad range of online services, including social media, gaming, food delivery, streaming, and financial platforms, a reminder that society increasingly depends on just a handful of companies for much of its internet's technology. In a minutes-long strike last Sunday, inside the world's most visited museum, thieves rode a basket to lift up the Louvre's facade, forcing a window, smashed display cases, and fled with priceless Napoleonic jewels, officials have said. The Paris prosecutor said the jewels are worth an estimated $102 million, but that estimate does not include their historical value to France. Trump's on Thursday pardoned Binance founder Changpeng Zhao, who created the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange and went to prison for failing to stop criminals from using the platform to move money connected to child sex abuse, drug trafficking, and terrorism. The billionaire and Binance supported some Trump enterprises. And Chauncey Billups, the Portland Trailblazers head coach, and Terry Rozier, a player for the Miami Heat, were arrested Thursday along with more than 30 other people in two criminal cases alleging separate sprawling schemes to rake in millions of dollars by rigging sports bets and poker games involving mafia families, according to authorities. From Washington, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth said on Friday that the U.S. military conducted its 10th strike on a vessel suspected of carrying drugs overnight, killing six people and bringing the death toll of the campaign against drug cartels to at least 46 people. In a post to social media, Hegseth said that the vessel was operated by the Tren de Aragua gang and the strike occurred in the Caribbean. The pace of the strikes has quickened in recent days from one every few weeks in September when they first began to now three in 1 week. Two of the strikes this past week were also carried out in the Eastern Pacific, expanding the area in which the military was willing to conduct the strikes. Trump's administration announced new massive sanctions on Wednesday against Russia's oil industry to pressure Russian President Vladimir Putin to negotiate an end to Moscow's war on the Ukraine. The sanctions will take effect on November 21st. U.S. Vice President Vance arrived Tuesday in Israel among top U.S. envoys and other officials designated to visit to support Gaza and deal with the ceasefire. And a memoir by Virginia Giuffre, an outspoken accuser of Prince Andrew and the late financier Jeffrey Epstein, hit the bookstores on Tuesday. Nobody's Girl was published posthumously after Giuffre died by suicide back in April. Prince Andrew announced that he will stop using his titles, including the Duke of York and other honors, that denies Giuffre's claims. Coca-Cola is rolling out a new version of its classic soda made with U.S. cane sugar, but where it's going to be sold is still unclear. The Atlanta beverage giant has introduced a new 12-ounce single-serve glass bottle in select U.S. markets, offering consumers a classic and timeless way to enjoy their Coca-Cola original taste made with U.S. cane sugar, a spokesman said in a written statement. Just days after Trump's social media post in July, Coca-Cola confirmed plans for a new Coke product with cane sugar as part of its ongoing innovation agenda. But there's a hitch. John Murphy, Coca-Cola president and its chief financial officer, told Bloomberg News that the company is limited in how much it can produce. That's because of supply constraints of U.S. cane sugar and also the company's capacity to produce the drink in glass bottles, he said. Coca-Cola already uses some cane sugar in other countries such as Mexico, and Mexican Coke is available for sale in tall glass bottles in many stores across the United States. It also uses cane sugar in some of its other products such as lemonade, tea, and vitamin water drinks. We're definitely looking to use the whole toolkit of available sweetening options to some extent where the consumer's preference is, Chairman and CEO James Quincy said in July earnings call. The Food and Drug Administration says it's not aware of any evidence that products with high fructose corn syrup are less safe than those with sugar. But for over a century, the Coca-Cola Contour glass bottle has been an icon of refreshment and connection, the company spokesperson said on Wednesday. This launch reflects our ongoing commitment to giving people more ways to enjoy the beverages that they love. That takes care of the reading of the Green Valley News for this Monday. Mark DeGroft with you. Thank you so much for listening. And I'll be back with you on Wednesday. Until then, take care.